everybody. Welcome back to the Park Ridge Presby Podcast, the podcast of Park Ridge Presbyterian Church in Park Ridge, Illinois. I'm your host, Amanda Joria, one of the pastors here. Today, I'm really excited to share a conversation that I got to have with Todd and Stephanie Edgar. Todd Edgar is one of our international mission partners. He serves with SAM Air, one of the ministries of South American Mission. Todd is from Park Ridge. His grandparents go to this church, and they were in town, and they got to sit down with us and tell us a little bit about their story. So I'm excited for you to hear from them. One of the reasons I'm really excited for you to hear about Todd's life and Todd's ministry that he ended up in is a lot of times I think that people think to be in ministry means to work at a church and maybe be a pastor like me. But as you'll hear from Todd, that's not at all what he does day to day, and he is still answering God's call and he is serving in ministry. So I'm excited to share this conversation with you, with Todd and Stephanie Edgar. Well, Todd and Stephanie, it's so good to have you here at Park Ridge Presbyterian. We're really glad that you had time to have this conversation. Todd, why don't we start with you? Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your connection to Park Ridge, and what it is you do?
My name is Todd Edgar. This is my wife, Stephanie Edgar. We work with South America Mission in Pucallpa, Peru. My connection here, or our connection here, is that my grandparents attended here and attend here for many years, Bob and Marilyn Michon. I was born here in Park Ridge, raised here, attended Maine South, and then left for school, met my wife in Bolivia, and now we have the privilege of serving in Peru.
And why don't you tell us what it is you do in Peru? How do you serve in Peru?
We work with South America Mission, which is over SAM Air, which is our aviation program. SAM Air exists to serve the local church, to build bonds between communities, to further Bible translation, to deliver supplies, to move doctors and medical equipment and church leaders, and really anything that fits in the door.
And why don't you tell us what it is you do in Peru? How do you serve in Peru?
Currently, my role is I'm in charge of the aircraft maintenance program and the shop in general. My day might look like we have an aircraft inspection or scheduled maintenance that could be engine changes or major maintenance or small things. It could be we need to work on the generator that gives our power. We could have to work on the aligned antenna on our internet. We could be fixing a plumbing problem. We could be doing electrical. We could be working on someone's motorcycle or a translator or a Bible or a pastor's equipment or a well pump or anything like that. So anything to be furthering the mission.
And you guys have a family. You're raising your family in Peru. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your girls?
Sure. We have three daughters. Naya is 12, Anya's 9, and Caitlin is 7. They were all born in Peru. They attend a little mission school there. They keep us busy, keep us on our toes. They're all very different and unique.
And Stephanie, you're involved in ministry too. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the ministry that you're involved in?
Sure. Back in 2010, I co-founded a crisis pregnancy center in the town that we live just outside of with our pastor's wife. And it's just to provide crisis counseling to teenage women who find themselves expecting. It's to also educate the youth on just different topics, just to make sure they have all the facts, all the information they need to make wise decisions, and also to talk about the importance of sexual purity and all those things. It's still going. We haven't had a lot of activity this past year due to COVID. But we are still functioning as a ministry.
So let's talk about last year. Let's talk about the way that you guys have seen COVID impact your families personally, as well as the broader community and the ministries you guys are a part of.
I think that COVID, well, obviously was a surprise for all of us. Specifically how it impacted our aviation program or this mission, the missions that we're serving, is that a lot of the people that we would normally be flying in and out of the jungle of all the communities, all that stopped. And we pretty much transitioned to constant medevac flights. We were flying where we used to do just a, we only sparsely did medevac flights because the most medevac people would end up in a boat or in an outboard motor going to a community, you know, maybe a day away or 2 days away. COVID made it much more urgent. And we started doing a lot more medevac flights for COVID patients, for or COVID mix, so COVID dengue, COVID pregnancy issue, COVID burn, COVID snake bite, COVID anything where everything started to get bad really quickly. And so we were doing a flight a day, if not two flights a day or three flights a day sometimes, just backing them up, just trying to get as many people out as possible. But the problem being that a lot of times the local hospital didn't have space for them, and so we were picking up people in villages and flying them to other cities where they might, someone said, hey, there's a bed over there, and we call the hospital and they say yes, and so we might fly them like 4 hours in the other direction just to get them to a hospital that had a space.
It really sounds like your role in your ministry got kind of elevated to first responders, kind of the first responder level that we experienced here in the United States.
Yeah, and it was complicated in that, you know, we didn't have, think about our airplane is would be like the inside of a van, and that we needed to be able to protect our pilots, and so we ended up building special barriers that divided our pilots from the cabin, and then everyone had to wear these crazy hazmat suits, and the plane needs to get scrubbed down between every flight, and because it's possible that the next flight might only be a lady with a pregnancy issue, and so we couldn't have a contamination of a COVID patient and then backed up with a non-COVID patient, and so every flight was turned around and fueled and scrubbed and fogged and cleaned, and then possibly the same pilot or maybe another pilot, depending on how many hours they're only allowed to fly per day, might rotate a pilot in and then keep going.
So what would you say now, kind of on the other side of that year and the process that you just laid out, kind of what would you tell us about your team and how they really worked together in this last year?
We were operating with a reduced staff because of the issue. Several of our local or Peruvian staff couldn't come in or were because during the lockdown, people couldn't necessarily travel. And so our Peruvian staff couldn't even necessarily come to the hangar on certain days. And so we were understaffed. Two of our pilots left, or one was, so one had a medical issue and couldn't fly, and one actually left during the pandemic. And so we were down to one pilot for most of the operation. But it was just, it was good. I mean, the whole team just knew, like, this is what we do Monday through Sunday, you know, just go. And so it was good that we all banded together, and it didn't matter what, you know, roles didn't matter anymore. It was, you know, someone could fuel and someone could clean and someone could fly, and we'd do it again the next day.
And Stephanie, what about at the Crisis Pregnancy Center? How did you see and experience COVID impacting the work that you do in the community?
Well, beginning in March last year, the Peruvian government declared a mandatory quarantine on March 16th, and everything was very strict, very shut down. There was to be no movement, no gatherings. Only one person per household was able to be out to do grocery shopping or just buy basic necessities, medicine. And that was that way for 4 or 5 months. And then after that, it slowly kind of, they lifted a few restrictions, but you know, people still had to wear masks, people still weren't allowed to congregate. And just because our office is in a very public place downtown with a police station on the corner, and we didn't want to be violating any rules or laws, so we've just decided to just keep in touch with the few ladies we had begun or had been working with before the quarantine, just keeping in touch with them by telephone and checking in on them, praying with them, sending them food and diapers and medicine several times throughout the quarantine, and just following up with them, really. We really couldn't get down to the office. Some of our volunteers are elderly, and there was a mandatory, like anyone above the age of 65 wasn't supposed to be out at all for anything. And so there are just a lot of regulations. And so it kind of sort of shut the office down, but we were still trying to do what we could from by phone and things like that. So another aspect of our ministry is we used to go into the schools and give talks to the youth, but schools were not meeting at all. And we finally decided that it would be a good idea to do some recordings of our talks. And so we've been in that process. And even up until the time we left, we're still kind of in the middle of all of that. But hoping that now having a digital copy of these talks that we give on different topics, we can actually get to more schools now, because we're not a huge team and there are so many schools in the city where we live, and so having a digital version is really good for the future as well, because then we can get it out to a lot more people.
And so your girls have been doing remote learning this whole time too, right?
Yes, they finished the last school year, March through May, last year virtually, and they had their summer break, and in August they began virtually again, and all of us were a little surprised. For some reason we thought, surely by August this will not be a problem, but that wasn't the way it was. So they completed the first semester virtually and through the end of January. In February, because the mission school is very small, it has very small classes, they've decided to do in-person schooling, but once again they are virtual because cases have spiked again in our town. So we kind of lived week by week hearing from the school what they decided about the following week, virtual or going, and just knowing that it could be virtual for a very long time. And it's been hard on the kids, very challenging, especially there people are pretty spread out, so it's not like they could see each other every day, so that was hard. But yeah, their kids are resilient.
Okay, so let's talk about the end of 2020. Let's talk about that storm and what happened to your plane and where you guys are now.
So I don't remember the date exactly, but it was sometime in early to mid-November. It was a stormy day, just like any other stormy day. We were actually sitting in our house, which was right in front of the float plane hangar. We just heard the storm getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And in my mind, I was actually thinking, I wonder if there's something we need to be doing. And I walked outside and actually saw the hangar blow over onto the float plane. It just lifted right up and then just kind of like over and down. It just like smeared across the top of it. And I mean, honestly, planes aren't durable. Like, I knew instantly that it was bad. During that, we lost several huge trees. The power went out. The internet went out. It was just like a tornado or a microburst or a hurricane or whatever it was. It was awful. And it just sounded like a freight train coming through. So we spent the next couple hours pulling trees off power lines, restoring the power, restoring the internet. Our phones were out for like 2.5 months. And we drained the fuel out of the wings, just trying to get ready so that we could lift the roof off of the plane and attempt to get it out. I don't know, I think it was maybe 2 days later, we were able to get a big crane in, lifted the roof off of the plane, pulled it out, and it was obviously damaged. The floats had holes in them, the wings were crunched, the tail was mangled. Through all of it, we were actually able to salvage the engine, the propeller, and we were able to get the floats off it and get them repaired. Our hope was that by the end of December, we were able to get a replacement plane swap going, and it ended up being the first couple of days of January before we would get the floats repaired and onto one of our other land planes. And so we've been able to restore float plane service to the jungle since January. It was amazing that everything was able to come together in the pandemic, that parts were able to get shipped to Peru, float pieces. And it was a small miracle in itself. And something that, it amazes us to this day was that we sent out a call for help about trying to raise money for a new plane. And in about 6 weeks, God was able to raise all the funds for a replacement plane that is in process of being finished right now in Waxhaw, North Carolina, at Wycliffe's aviation facility called JARS. And they're doing a fantastic job, and we are super thankful that Wycliffe was able to help us with this plane. But we were able to raise enough money to cover the plane and the replacement hangar, which was actually just finished a couple days ago, the floatplane hangar. We built it all out of metal. We got just about everything done before I got here, and then they finished roofing it the other day. So it was a total God thing, and not even a small miracle. It was a huge miracle.
That's amazing. So the plane, you said, is about to be finished up in North Carolina, and when is it going to get to you in Peru?
Our goal is to have the plane, well, our and JARS's goal together is to have the plane finished by mid-August. We're still waiting on an engine. They're still finishing all the electronics and the whole electronic and the radios and the panel install. And after that, it's going to be test flying and final rigging, fuel setups, a lot of the detail stuff, and then it should be done by mid-August. We're not sure how long it's going to take to get there. We can fly the plane from North Carolina to Peru. It's about 5 to 6 days of transit through Mexico and Central America and down to Peru. But it's going to be an issue transiting all those borders right now with COVID. And so I think we would love to have it there before the end of the year, but there's going to be a lot of permissions that need to come through in all these different countries so that we can transit through them and over them.
So that is a huge God sighting. Let's just wrap up with where you guys are seeing God at work right now, where God is moving for you personally and in your ministry.
I was thinking of the last year and just how, I know COVID was bad everywhere. It was really bad in our area. Hospitals were collapsing. They just weren't equipped or able to handle the numbers of people that were sick and needing medical attention or an ICU bed or oxygen. It's been hard to see friends lose loved ones all through this time. A lot of our friends have been sick as well. Most of them have recovered. But just through all of that, our family has been healthy. So it's a big praise, and I'm very thankful. It's definitely by God's grace. And even though, being in lockdown was hard and virtual schooling was hard, it also, I don't know if we're through it yet, but just showed us areas as a family we need to grow in. And so I felt like it was a very refining time and still is maybe because we're still processing some of that stuff. But and then just God's provision for the float plane was huge because we weren't doubting that we would be able to raise funds or that the funds would be raised. We just didn't ever imagine it would be so quick. So that kind of all blew us away. And to have enough funds to even repair or rebuild the whole hangar, it was just cool to see. And not just donors from the U.S., donors from all over the world. A lot of Peruvian friends donated towards the replacement of the plane. So that was just neat and encouraging. And people from all over and in different fields of work, and that was really neat. So
if you could tell us where people can learn more about Sam Air or get in touch with you if they want to learn more or support the work that you're doing.
I think that if you want to learn more about who we are and what we're doing and where we've been and where we're going, you can probably find us on Facebook. Or if not, please contact the church office, and Josh or Amanda can hook you up with our phone number or our email address or how to get to us.
Well, thank you guys so much for your time and making time for this conversation. We're so excited that we get to be able to share your story with all of our listeners and our congregation. Thanks so much. Hey, thanks again for listening today. If you'd like to hear more from us, you can subscribe to this podcast or find us on Instagram, Facebook, or YouTube. We are at Park Ridge Presby on all platforms.